mundo. Hello, and once again, a very warm welcome to the Gestalten podcast. My name is Martin Gruschwald, and in this week's episode of our season two, Car Design in California, we will be talking to the twins of the now famous and infamous oil stain lab, Ilya and Nikita Bryden. Probably a lot of you guys have come across Oil Stain Lab at some point, either as a design studio, but also, of course, with their really cool Half 11, their Instagram accounts, and really all things car design culture. So we will be talking a little bit about their past, about their experience, of course, also about their work as teachers at Art Center, and what they actually see the future of car design in California is all about, and what has especially changed since that kind of big boom that started everything with Tesla again. So enjoy the conversation with Ilya and Nikita from Oil Stain Lab. Hello, hello. Hello, Nikita. Hello, Ilya.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Hello. First of all, thank you very much for having me here in the actual Oil Stain Lab. And I've told you this, guys, before. So many people told me, like, when you do that pod, you have to do it with the twins. And I was so excited to come here, like, to see the Half 11 and everything. So, you like I said, I'm super excited that we do this together. And you have become, to a degree, I would say, some kind of design legends here in the community. And that has even swapped over all the way to Europe. So how does that feel?
Well, it's good to have you. Welcome to California. Welcome to the lab. Yeah, I guess we're infamous mostly because of that crazy thing behind us, the Half 11. But yeah, it's definitely weird. It's definitely weird.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, welcome to the lab. Happy to do this. Yeah, it feels weird because we're just kind of doing our thing and somewhat, yeah, become notorious. Not sure why. Feels like mistaken identity a little bit. but yeah, I guess we're happy to inspire people with what we're doing as much as, yeah, that is happening, I guess.
Yeah, and we're taking advantage of California's, you know, culture.
Yeah.
And the ability to put that thing on the street, you know, you can't really do that in Europe. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, California.
Well, obviously, I mean, like, you guys went to Art Center. You've had your careers here. You worked for quite a few of the OEMs around here as well. What makes California car design so special, so different from what you're seeing, what you have experienced from studios, big, small, those kind of things? And we'll come to the Half 11 a little bit later because I think that allows you to do different kind of things. But from a professional perspective, why do you still think there's so many studios here and what makes them different?
Yeah, I mean, so we went to school originally in Italy, then went to school at Art Center. So we got to see that different approach, the Italian approach, California approach. And then obviously we worked here for a number of companies from a number of different countries. So even within that ecosystem, you know, very different approaches from, you know, Toyota, Honda to General Motors to GAC to then some of the startups that we've worked with. It's a, you know, a huge melting pot. You know, Art Center's approach has always been like super like artistic, I would say, and a little bit less on the intellectual side. And I think the studios here in California have that reputation in a way too, like across the industry, like people from Europe are just like, oh, those guys are just doing hot sketches and like, they're just screwing around and, you know, they're surfing and, you know, it's kind of, we joke, right? It's lifestyle, kind of a lifestyle studio.
Yeah.
But there's some really cool stuff that happens here culturally and kind of mixes together. Obviously you've got tech in Silicon Valley. Mm. Now that's Silicon Beach, Marina Del Rey area. So there's a lot of like really cool technology. There's also a lot of really cool space stuff that's happening. So just right around here where we are, there's Relativity, Virgin, Slingshot. There's so many of these crazy startups that are happening. Or Spin Launch. Yeah, that's my favorite one. or spin it fast enough and launch it. but yeah, no, I mean, I think obviously the weather, the food, the culture, it's a big city. It's a driving city too. There's a lot of history, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you could almost say electric cars started here, like the modern electric car. So, and then there's all these app startups like Uber and, you know, kind of new ways of using cars. Yeah. And it's kind of a nice little test bed for all that stuff and connecting it with apps. And there's a lot of reasons that it's like fairly unique, I guess, relative to the rest of the world.
How do you guys see that the effect that has on the designers? Because obviously you also have entertainment here. And just to kind of understand, like, do you think differently? If you look back to the beginning of your career, you have completely different influences. Because I always find it funny that technically we have so many satellite studios here. We have so many, they call them advanced studios or whatever you want to, which is not production. And everything that you have just mentioned, Nikita, is like full-on production, hardcore. You know, like if you want to build a rocket, that's very different from just having a nice little sketch and an idea. So how does that work together? Or like, you know, is that a change of mindset? Is that a change of like also the people studying? Because it's so far away from each other to almost then say like, you know, how does it work?
I'll say this. The studios here want to do production, but it's politics that stops it. And also maybe not wanting to spend 5 years in a cold country working on a production program. But yeah, no, I think for my brother and I, we probably came to LA as like dreamers, you know, thinking, you know, this is the place to like, you know, change the world and make these cool cars and everything, right? And kind of in a way, anything's possible. And obviously the mindset changes very quickly once you're in a big car company and stuff like that. But I still think, I mean, you can extrapolate or build on it, but it's still a place where I think you can just about do anything if you put your mind to it in terms of like the resources, the technology, building stuff, and just testing stuff. It's like a safe place to test stuff too, right? Pretty progressive, open sort of culture where you can just put autonomous cars on the road. Why not? What could go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting, right, is the studios are pretty much very blue sky for the most part. And I would say the designers are obviously, you know, trained by Art Center to fit into that system. But inherently, if you work for a car company for more than, you know, a couple of years, you've probably worked on some production program, been, you know, sent to Korea, Europe, wherever, right? And you've learned those skills. And then inherently, you begin to see that, you know, maybe blue sky isn't all that you thought it was, right? And as you mature as a designer, you see all these other opportunities with different industries, whether it's space, whether it's whatever. And you start to maybe dabble and try and go into some of those industries. And so I think there's this massive cross-pollination between designers here and the other industries, you know, whether it's electric boats, rocket ships, apps, whatever. I mean, between me and you, it's like, how many designers do we know that are still doing cars? Mostly everyone's kind of moved out into robotics, all these other industries, because it's also fascinating to work on those things, you know?
Yeah, there's no real like career car designers, right? Guys that have been in the industry for like 25 years or something.
In like, California?
In California. Like everyone pretty much bails after like 10 years, 15 years. They're like, I'm going to do sneakers, or I'm going to do spaceships.
Or they go and they do the corporate thing at like, you know, a big HQ or something.
Yeah,
like
that, that's exactly the point. Then they leave and go to Korea, they go to Europe or wherever.
Get that big promotion.
Yeah, but also like, you know, it depends a little bit. I think you, when I come here as a German, and you see a lot of the Germans here, I see that they have changed. Like we still, like we speak the same language. We understand exactly what we're talking about, but the mindset changes completely when you're here. And I think it's interesting because for us, there's always the question, well, why don't the, you know, the guys from California want to come to Europe and do cars and those kind of things? And I think that's exactly the point, is because you see so many other things here is where you say like, well, do I need to go to the HQ in Wolfsburg or in Munich or in Stuttgart or whatever and do that for the next 25 years? You know, I think there's this attitude here to say, like, I have no problem of doing something else. And it's much more widely accepted as well. And this is a weird, like, for a European coming here, that's very strange. You know, like, we see that a little bit more often, but over here it's fine. Like, if you want to quit, you quit. It's like,
yeah. I mean, with the, like, when we worked at Honda and Toyota, like, the Japanese were very loyal to their company.
It's like a 3-year thing, right? The first year they get here, and it takes them a while to get comfortable, you know, to understand the layout of the city, the activities, where to live, where to eat, all of these things, right? Second year, they start loosening up. All the California guys in the studio, they're cracking jokes, they're going surfing, they're all living a great time. And you know, the foreigners, the Japanese, the Europeans, they start, you know, partaking and like, you can see it, but they're still like slightly uncomfortable with it, right? They're like, should I really be doing this? And by the third year, they're full on Californians. They're going dirt biking, you know, they're full on surfing till 10 a.m. You know, you get immersed in the lifestyle of California, and it is, lots of hard work, but it's also like, there's so many things you can do, you know?
Europeans, though, are different. They just go like full redneck, most of them.
I mean, a little bit.
Right? They all get like dirt bikes and they go shoot guns in the desert.
But I think a lot from that comes here actually, because we don't have that in Europe. You know, if you guys probably like look back to your Italy times, you could never drive an F-150 in Turin or in Milano. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, our dad had a Fiat Abarth, like I think 2.4 liter.
Yeah.
And they were like, why do you need such a big engine and such a big car? Very different.
Yeah. And over here, it's just like, is that just half of an engine?
Yeah. It's a one cylinder.
Yeah. So let me guys ask you this, like everything that you're saying now, why are these studios still here? Because that means there's a turnover, you know, you kind of have to adapt constantly. Why do you think those studios are still here? Because you could easily say we could run a different kind of system. We could try, you know, like not having a studio, something which is much more pop-up style and all these kind of things. But there must be something that these studios have survived for, you know, Talty is a little bit different, but Design Works been here for like ages.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot just be like, okay, we have a turnover of people, but the culture plays probably a role. Like, you know, what's most appealing.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously I think it goes back to that cross pollination of everything, right?
Yeah.
The exposure that you have to, innovation, free thinkers, not just in automotive, but the whole innovation R&D industries, right. Is massive. I think, you know, there's obviously a sense of prestige as well, for having a studio in California. I would say every startup doesn't need to have one in California, but if you want to play with the big boys, you got to have the studio here. So I think it is a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy almost, ever since it got started. But it's really hard to find that anywhere else in the world. I mean, obviously the weather's fantastic. People want to be here.
Yeah. Right?
It's easy to recruit, super easy. The exposure, different industries, entertainment obviously is massive. There's also,
Do you think it's just like a self-fulfilling prophecy just because it started here and it's just going to kind of keep going because that's where like Art Center is and that's where there's already resources built to support these studios like Aria and Fiaro and all that, right? Because it's whenever we travel around the world, we always find really cool places that are also cross-pollinated and everything.
Not to the level. Where else are you going to find the space industry?
I'm devil's advocate.
Where else are you going to find Hollywood? But yes, there is obviously a self-sustaining industry of concept car builders, prototype shops, all of this stuff, right? The skill set to like paint concept cars and all of this, like can't just go anywhere in the world. There's a highly specialized process to it. You know, just even the fact that like if a studio closes, you can just buy a bunch of clay mills and open up another studio.
Yeah.
It's all here. You don't have to ship it around the world. Resource definitely heavy, you know, in terms of availability.
Yeah. If you know the right people. Because I think what I always see here is the tendency to have smaller studios because also you know who's good, you know, who is in, like, you know, where's the kind of middle way. That's always what I find so fascinating in Europe, and now even more so in China, is you have an even bigger amount of workforce,
right,
But the studios are also much bigger. Like if you, like, you know,
yeah,
hundreds and hundreds of people, find studios here that are hundreds of people. I think, you know, a big one is 100. If you go 200, it's almost impossible to find anything, mm-hmm. you know. So the resource is there, but you also need to know where to look and also need to know, okay, is it interesting enough? Because there are enough other industries that say like, hey, here's something interesting, you know, eVTOL. Oh yeah, okay, cool. Next one. What's coming up next? You want to go to SpaceX? Okay, go to SpaceX.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it's unique.
Right.
Because like in the end, you can say like, you know, the supplier function, yeah, you can go to Munich. Probably even better in terms of suppliers. If you want to set up a studio that is just about cars, apart from maybe the weather and the location where it is, but like the system in itself, the system in itself is probably almost like a better well-oiled machine than anything is over here. But there's something here where the people still say, I get more, you know, more inspiration here. I get yeah. more, you know, input that I don't get anywhere else in the world.
I think it also, like, LA attracts a lot of risk takers, you know? There's an element of risk, kind of. It's, you know, it's pretty expensive to live here. The U.S. social thing isn't, there's no safety net, yeah. you know? And actors come here and they work in a cafe, and the risk is, you know, to be living broke and try and make it, right? And I think the people that work in the LA studios generally are more comfortable with like a studio closing down
yeah.
or like the startup going under. Like it becomes normal, that level of risk. And I think in other places in the world, like that's almost unacceptable. But here it's kind of like, yeah, let's go do this thing for 6 months. And hey, if it runs out, like we'll just go talk to my buddy and, you know, we'll start working in that studio and we'll do this and we'll do that. So yeah, I don't know, maybe.
I think that's very true.
That's true.
I think that's very, very true. But I think that's also one of these points is where you see like people that then make that leap, no matter where they come from, are serious about it. Mm-hmm. Because it is mentally such a tough thing. And if you've never gone through it, you know, you have to go through that, okay, company's bust, I need to find something else, so through yeah. that shock moment so that you can develop it again and like, you know, go to the next one. And I don't know anywhere else in the world where this happens so frequently as well.
Yes. Got to pick the right company.
that's very true.
But we're all just gamblers. Just degenerate gamblers.
But like, okay. Taking that, so how does it fit that in with the young kids? Because that is a tough environment for a young kid coming in, developing here. Like, let's not take those guys that come from Europe, that come from anywhere else, that know their trade, they know once they're here, they will always get a job because of experience that they have. But for a young kid, and maybe a little bit for you guys, when you guys then started off in the industry, that can be really tough to have that kind of environment and say, I go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a GM, there were a couple of young kids there and they came from Detroit and they definitely had a different mindset and had to sort of calm them down numerous times because, you know, with the GM Advanced Studio, there were constant rumors they're going to shut it down. They're going to move everybody to Australia, or everyone from Australia is going to move. And it was just constant noise. And all the old guys, us, we were like, yeah, this has been around for like 4 years. Like we all know these rumors come back every 6 months. Yeah, like yeah. it's fine. But like, they're like, oh, I just bought a house and this and that. So yeah, I mean, I think if you're, there's not a terribly huge amount of young designers in California, I would say. It's always been skewed a little older, the little more experience, because it is kind of a startup mentality or smaller studios. So you're expected to like, you know, contribute and not, yeah. you know, not just be like learning. So I think also there's not a great development path for young designers here,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just speaking from personal, like when we went to Calty, like, I don't think they'd hired really anyone new except Mike Kim in like the last 8 years. And so they had no idea how to like use young designers, develop young designers, how to work with them. It was like, yeah, it was kind of not great, right?
Yeah, I mean, young designers are super sensitive, right? They're not hardened yet or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of things they see and feel very harsh to them, even though it's like, that's how the industry works, you know? So yeah, I think, and startups in particular, I think, are averse to hiring young people in general in California, from everything I've heard and seen, just because they want those like SWAT team members, you know, that are,
you know, they have multiple skill sets and you hire one person to do basically three people's job.
Yeah, you know?
And so young designers tend to not have that full complete skill set just due to exposure yet, you know? Yeah. So, it's tough being young in California, from a mental perspective, but also like the job pool is probably inherently smaller as well because of that, you know?
Yeah, I think you have the pressure. The pressure is one thing.
Yeah.
What I'm always observing here is you have, I think, a lot of opportunity in terms of jobs, but you need to prove really hard that you're worth it as well.
Yeah, and I would say it's like fiercely competitive because it's like, okay, you're good at your school.
Yeah.
You're best in your class, whatever. But now you're competing against the guy who was best in his class like 10 years ago. And now he has 10 years of experience and he knows the politics of the studio. He knows all the team members. He knows everything. And it's like, how are you going to beat him? Yeah. Like, how are you going to compete with him? Or like, how are you going to even contribute really? Because you're, you know, your packaging, your engineering knowledge, your crash, whatever knowledge may not be there, right? And so... yeah, a lot of students that are younger, they'll graduate and they just think like, oh, that's it. No, I just keep doing what I did at school. And it's like, no, you got a lot to learn still. And I mean, it's fiercely competitive because also everyone wants to be here. And they know that, look, if you're not delivering or if you're asking for too much money, like there's always a guy who'll do your job for less money, right? So I think it's good. It also creates turnover, which I think is good for the studios in a way because... they want fresh blood. They want fresh ideas, you know? But yeah, I'm glad I'm an old designer.
Well, you guys are not that old yet, you know? I think we're pretty much the same age. So like, you know, don't say you're old because then I feel old again. And that happens way too often in my office anyways. You guys both, do you both teach still? Or like just?
Yeah. Both teach.
Teaching
what? Like 10 years? 9 years?
Something like 10 years, huh?
Yeah. Kind of crazy.
Can you teach guys to be mentally strong for that kind of environment? Or is it literally just like, well...
I mean, look, we are exposed to the students for 14 weeks, 5 hours a week. So our ability to make them mentally strong is very limited. I mean, I think we try our best to give them honest feedback and honest assessment of the world they're walking into. But yeah, we're very limited on what we can really, I think.
Car design education's gone a lot softer than it was like 15 years ago. I'm just going to say that, you know, like I remember our first day in Italy, the guy came in and he's like the dean of whatever the department. He was like, this is war. This is going to be a battle for the next 3 years. Like, you guys ready for this? And like, only one of you is going to get a job. And like, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah,
you know. And even at Art Center, like, you know, we had instructors tell us that we'd never become anything. And like, you know, one instructor told me I should quit. Like, I have no choice, no hope of being a car designer. You know, so it's like, yeah, that makes you question what you do. You really want to do this? And like, not everyone's going to agree. Not everyone's going to say you're amazing. You know, you can't really say that these days to the students. So,
yeah, I mean, it's also I think it's also a problem in the size of the classes. You know, I mean. I remember when I speak to the guys 10, 15 years in now, a lot of them are like, well, we were 10 people or even less. Now you have classes of 20, 25. And
there's a lot of positions to be filled.
Yeah. And this is, I would love to have your opinion on this one. When I'm here, I see a lot of people, you know, I don't want to call them failed designers in that sense, but like, people that give up because they don't get the exterior job. They don't want to go into interiors. They don't want to go into modeling, viz, or like, you know, the DPM stuff in that context. So it's almost like, you know, like boom or bust, it seems a little bit. That it's also not even wanted to say like, okay, there's alternatives. It's like, no, like either you make it or get out of here, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think most car designers get into design, obviously, for the exterior side, you know? Like... it just seems like that's the, I don't know, the halo position, let's call it that, right? You know, I think no different for me and him, you know, yeah, exterior.
But I did a bunch of interior stuff, and actually had a lot of fun. There's a lot more freedom there than there is on an exterior. Granted, I was in an advanced studio and, you know, sandbox, but,
yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to the end is like, do you do it just because you read that story about the guy that's the face of the company and he came from exteriors and that's what you want to become. That's the dream. But like, yeah, there's so many different ways to get there. And, I think as new leadership in companies comes from different departments and stuff like that, hopefully it opens up the eyes of people that, you know, being a good designer isn't just about drawing exteriors or interiors or anything. It's a process. It's a thinking thing. Right. And then there's all these leadership skills and everything as you advance through. It's a lifetime of learning. So it's like, who cares if, you know, at the start of your career, you're not great at exteriors. Like maybe you're better in interiors and that's fine, you know, and like you excel at that, then you can learn exteriors, then you can learn all the processes and move up the ladder that way. But yeah, it should be more.
I think the more the best designers or the most respected designers generally know a lot about everything adjacent, you know, exterior, interior.
Well, they can do their own clay models, digital models, everything, right? The more multi-talented you are, the easier it is to communicate to everyone on the team.
Anyway. I think this idea that, or at least going into the future, that you can just draw a pretty exterior.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, if I was running a studio, who cares?
Yeah, but you can go on Instagram nowadays and see some really cool stuff. You know, you can see some really cool shit and just like, well, what am I going to do with that? I think the skill is also like to make it.
Yeah. But that also goes back to like the problem with education, right? Is like there's so many distractions online in terms of like the quality of work and stuff like that. It's, you know, the students are in like second term and all they care about is getting to that end result. And it doesn't matter if they know the process to get there, know the skills, they just want that in, you know, 2 hours or something like that. So they end up taking shortcuts and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, it's like when we do demos in class, you know, it's like half the students don't pay attention. They're just scrolling through Instagram, liking sketches, you know? And it's just, it's a different generation. The attention span is much lower.
It's like how to become a brain surgeon in 2 months.
Exactly.
Somebody told me like a really nice analogy the other day. And he said like, you know, in a lot of like the Chinese studios, for example, they expect you to give birth to a child, you know, in 1 month by 9 women. It's like, okay.
Accurate.
Does not work like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly.
But let me, what I want to know from you guys, having been here, obviously starting your own stuff, how much involvement, like how much influence does the tech industry actually have in California? Because what we have, if I compare this to Germany, like, you know, Munich, Stuttgart or whatever, it's very manufacturing heavy. That's where what the history is and all these things. Whereas over here, it's much more ideation, creation. The actual like manufacturing usually happens somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But then all this kind of tech industry happened. And you can write code, you can do it from here. And okay, you know, Apple manufactures in China, but like really all the prototyping and everything is being done here. Do you guys think and do you see that it has changed the mindset of the designers having that kind of influence coming from Silicon Valley to down here and how they see car design as well? Because I don't see anything like that comparable in Europe. And this is for me, obviously, biggest industry in the world now, the tech. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I see cars here that I think can only happen here. Cybertruck is one example, Tesla probably another one. Yeah. But like stuff that connects certain topics that I don't necessarily think we could do anywhere else. But like it also must then change something in the mind of a designer to then say like, well, I can only do that here.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, just internally in the studios, I mean, we've had a ton of projects where we're working with, crazy apps or suppliers or whatever in the tech industry, right? And they come and to us and basically say, hey, like, we're thinking of doing this and what would a car like that look like? Did a project, for example, with Lyft or whatever, you know, and it's like, okay, we're designing a car for these guys.
Yeah.
So there's definitely like a cross-pollination. There's also the element increasingly. So I think like younger designers and stuff, like they're not really car people.
Yeah.
right? They're more like tech people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are deep into UI UX, and they're sort of bringing that into car design, which is pretty fascinating. It's not really my cup of tea, but so I mean, and then I just feel like, yeah, we've got the autonomous tech here, right? So, you know, when I was working in the studios, I mean, for a period of like 4 years, like I didn't design a car, or work on a car with a steering wheel, you know, just like, yeah, pie in the sky. You know? but the reality is like, yeah, we're working with these software companies, camera companies, whatever. And you're trying to create a roadmap for the next 20 years, basically. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I think, I mean, you could say it's all rainbows and unicorns and stuff, and it's like this cross-pollination, but it's also like this forced marriage, right? You have these two industries living next door to each other. They're just going to get together, right? And then the designers sometimes they're not necessarily always on board with this stuff, right? And they're like, God damn it, why am I doing this? But I think the best designers take on those challenges and like reinvent them and make them palatable and make them these things that are desirable in some way. Because sometimes when you see the early like days or genesis of a product, it's a bit questionable. You're just like, I don't think anyone's going to really enjoy this, yeah. You know? So I think it's cool because, yeah, as a designer, you're exposed to these ideas or these early projects that don't get anywhere else.
And they change the way you think and approach things forever, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't unlearn something.
Yeah, it's like Pandora's box once you open that. It's like, and then you go to like HQ and they haven't even thought about it. And they look at you like you're an alien. Yeah. And they're just like, but it exists.
Like, oh yeah, it just comes out of California. Like, you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
but I want to jump a little bit onto that because you have the tech industry, but you also have entertainment. And I find it funny because I remember it was like 10 years ago in Pforzheim, there was this massive, almost like a cult following of Daniel Simon. You know, and you saw all like the portfolios look exactly like his, and like the same background color and all these things. And now he's doing all these movies and like, you know, all this entertainment stuff. Is there an interest for a lot of people just to kind of say like, well, screw this. And, you know, I don't need to do like normal cars anymore. I can now just go to the entertainment industry and do like the really cool shit that I always wanted to do. Because that's also like super unique to hear that I feel. Like, I don't know anywhere in the world where you could combine car design and this entertainment of craziness other than, let's say, the LA area.
Yeah. Interesting you say everyone tried to copy. Well, I think car companies are also trying to be tech companies now. So there's, you know, because of valuations and all that stuff, just to build on the previous topic. Yeah. Is there a lot of car designers that go into entertainment? I feel like there aren't that many here in California that make that jump.
Well, I would argue that there were probably a lot more in our era because entertainment at Art Center was a little weak, you know? And since then they've split a whole department off that's entertainment design. Wow, okay. Yeah. And I would say that department is definitely not transportation heavy. Yeah. It's like character design, monsters, environments, all of this stuff. Right. That really specific niche that Daniel Simon seems to have carved out for himself is very unique.
I think from a few people that have made the jump, I think there's a lot of frustration at the speed that you work with in the entertainment industry and the fact that like, okay, highlights don't matter.
Yeah.
Like it's basically like spaceship goes, it's got to look good on screen. Right. Yeah. And, I know from a few friends I've heard that basically like, yeah, they get frustrated that they don't get to spend time to like refine it. They just have to like bash something out in a day and like, that's it. But I mean, who needs entertainment when we got spaceships and eVTOLs for real?
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, and I know, like, you know, some people might hate me for saying that, but like, it's just the next kind of level of advanced design because it really is not about feasibility; it's about pure entertainment, and it's about selling it to the right people, and it's part of, in the end, you know, a big sales pitch, and hopefully the sales pitch works, and like people watch the movie.
Yeah.
But it's also something, the way I see it, is like it's really untapped. I think, you know, in terms of the combination again, to say like, well, how many car companies do entertainment stuff? Like Audi did it with, you know,
iRobot.
Exactly.
Porsche Star Wars.
Well, that's a little bit weird though, isn't it? I mean, that's just like, let's, okay, that was that really a Porsche apart from the lights? It's like, you know, you can do anything with that.
Yeah.
Whereas the Audi stuff was much more.
Yeah.
Or like Cadillac with when.
The Island?
No, with the Entourage movie.
Oh, you're right.
You know, that was specifically made for something like that, where you, of course, have the product placement. But it almost seems like you could do a little bit more if they would ever really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, good designers also entertain and surprise, right? And so if you can, you know, bring that into like entertainment stuff. I mean, our buddy did those like sunglasses that Kim Kardashian wore. Right?
Yeah, I think the hardest part about all this is really just having producers and people in the film industry that are educated enough to actually see the value in it. Because I feel like they're the hardest ones to pitch and be like, let's spend an extra $1 million and like build some really cool vehicles. Yeah. They're like, nah, let's just put some like flat wheel covers on here and like tape up the headlights a little bit and it's futuristic.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can do it digitally.
Yeah.
Exactly. Old Lexus Minority Report, yeah. Harold Belker.
But yeah, I think that's the biggest issue.
Yeah.
You know, we know the value.
Yeah, let's talk about some crazy shit in that sense. What's been going through your mind and saying just like, we're building this thing over there, you know, like how do you come up? Like, obviously we now know California allows you just to do pretty much anything and also to build almost pretty much anything. But how do you start this kind of idea and say, we build a half 11 in probably the biggest Porsche community in the world and almost like go in is like, well, we probably gonna screw with quite a few people.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, where do you even start with this story?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, like we were basically beginning to launch like Oil Stain Lab as like a design consultancy. And we're big fans of kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the genesis of this project. Yeah, we read a book where Jay Mays talked about it. That's one of the reasons we wanted to come to California originally anyway. It was based out here and stuff. So yeah, I mean, the Half 11 basically is kind of our Italian coach building experience, you know, Giugiaro, yeah. Open in Farina, where we went to school first, and then basically Group R, Porsche, Hot Rods, California Hot Rods, and entertainment storytelling,
yeah.
Right? So it's a mix of those two. We knew basically the project wanted to be a story rather, like we're not car builders. Before yeah. we started this, we didn't know how to weld, didn't know how to do anything. So we're not car builders, but what we do know, we think what we wanted to do was basically tell a compelling story that would interest people that aren't just car designers or car people, but like people that like history, people that like science fiction, people like, so it kind of, a bigger bucket, let's say, right? And it's captivating for those people. And also car design stories are like so boring. It's like, oh, we sat around, we did some sketches. Like, how do you tell it in a different way or unique way? So obviously there's the whole fake history element,
yeah.
Which it a little bit is connected to like my senior thesis where I recreated Bugatti's history, blah, blah, blah. But
empowered by Trump.
Yes, and at the time, yeah, basically there were these big social undertones of like, what's real, who stole the election, what's, you know, it's gotten so much more intense over the last 4 or 5 years, but even then you could start seeing like where this was going to go and, you know, how can we sort of make fun of it in a way. And then obviously you're dealing with endless scrolling, blasé condition, people just, you know, flipping through and digesting imagery, concepts, but like nothing forces you to stop or wakes you up, kind of slap in the face, right? So we wanted something that's like really challenges you. So the viewer has to engage. They have to make a decision. Is this fake? Is this real?
Yeah.
Do I want to believe? Do I not want to believe? So there's like a lot of deeper thought behind it. And, you know, it kind of gradually evolved. But the idea was just to fundamentally build a car that was part of an era that we never got to experience, the 1960s, yeah. Motor racing, the glory years, let's say. And just to like try and contribute to that, not just like steal from it, but also like, I don't know, somehow be part of it, right? So that was kind of the dream.
Yeah, it was an homage to a feeling, right? Because it's like, we talk to people and like they live through it, but like what does that really mean? Mm. You know? So to us, it's just like, we wanted to capture whatever that feeling was in our head. And you know, it was this crazy race car, Porsche derived styling, obviously. And, yeah, crazy proportions, everything of that era. Right. And like aerodynamics that didn't really work, but kind of looked like they might work, you know? And yeah, that's basically where it started and took us on a, what, four year journey to build to where it is today.
Yeah. And probably the best part was like having a guy drive it, Rick Noop, who's driven like old Can-Am cars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think he's won Le Mans, he's won like a bunch of stuff. And to have him drive it and then basically be like, this is legit like a McLaren Can-Am car. It was like, yay, we did it. Cool. Because like, we have no idea what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we drive it and it's like, yeah, it's extreme. But like, I don't know what a McLaren Can-Am car feels like. So yeah, it was great validation. Yeah.
I remember when I first saw it and I told you, like, you know, a few of my friends said, like, you know, speak to them. And I remember I saw the first fake histories, you know, posts that you guys did. The black and white ones. And I was really just, I had to like go back to a friend of mine, to Seb. And I was just like, dude, what's like, I have no idea about Porsche history. It's not my thing, you know, but like, what's this, you know? So you clearly made an impact there. And what did the people say? I mean, obviously, you know, your fellow car design friends and everything like that. What did the Porsche people say? Because I mean, you're invading so many cultures.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at the start, it was a very different car that had very different intention to where it is now.
Yeah.
And so I have to say that it's been also an interesting sort of design experiment as we posted the renderings, gotten real-time feedback from the public, good, bad, ugly, and basically kind of put our ego aside and been like, okay, well, most people are saying this or something. Like, how do we interpret that? How do we make this better? And as the scope of the project grew, like, there were other reasons why we'd want to listen to other people. But I think it was really interesting, I think, looking back on it, how it matured and everything. You know, part of it was obviously to piss off purists in a way. and not maliciously, but just to like...
smile on your face.
Right, just... I remember going to a car meet and this guy basasically criticizing the windows in this beautiful Porsche because the Sigla logo or whatever was like 3 degrees off. And then the other guy arguing, no, that's exactly what it's like from the factory. That's how you know it's original glass. And just thinking like, that's cool, but like, well, you know, like, why do we have to be so snobby about it and like criticize this guy's beautiful car? So yeah, part of it was that. Part of it was, as you'd mentioned already, the huge Porsche community.
Yeah.
Like, I think everything that could imagine be done with a 911 has been done. Like, there's nothing left, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a horse that's been beaten to death. So we cut it in half. But I think it's an opportunity for us basically to, yeah, stick out and obviously attract some attention. But I think in terms of our friends, designers, I think no one thought it was going to be real. I think everyone saw the renderings, so like, haha, cool. And then, yeah, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, especially since we aren't builders, right? So it's like you start and like the first thing is like cut a 911 chassis in half and everyone's like looking at us like, what are you guys, insane? Like,
now what?
What are you going to do? Like, you don't know how to weld. You don't know how to do anything. And we're just like, well, you know, like baby steps, little by little. It was really fun to just like learn all the new skills and like metal shaping and welding and like suspension design and all of that stuff. And then it slowly just kind of like a trickle turns into, you know, a bigger kind of waterfall, so to speak. And like the people you meet, they're like, oh, cool. Like, you should do this. And you gain more skills and more connections. And it just like, yeah, snowballed into this huge freaking project that originally it was just like me and you in the garage, just dicking around. It's just, if you have a dream, just start and chase it. And you never know. I mean, it might take a really long time, but you'll get there eventually, yeah. You know?
Do you think this could ever happen anywhere else than here? Like a project like that with that mix of, because you need to have a certain kind of Porsche community and also like, you know, go in just like, well, screw you all. We're going to like do something a little bit different. Because that only happens if you see it so regularly and you see the, you know, because the thing is, I was really thinking about this. To tell a little anecdote, we in Munich, the Porsches are called the Munich Golfs because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And I went to lunch once with a friend and we were just like, you know, having a joke and having a laugh. And I was like, let's count how many Porsches we see like in an hour. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like 69 or 67 or something like that.
Wow.
But nobody would ever come to an idea of just to kind of then say like, oh, you know, okay, maybe we should take the piss out of this a little bit. So is this also because you have the seriousness around here, but you also have at the same time people that do change them, and like there is a certain kind of openness to that as well. Just some kind of people will say like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah, you can do it. It's like, it's not just this closed mind or narrow-mindedness.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, you know, very specific to California. I mean, we have very specific regulations to what you can do, right? And so we have hot rod culture, we have all this stuff, and those cars are all street legal, and obviously half 11 street legal too, under those same regulations. You know, it doesn't have to meet emissions, it doesn't have to do this, that, blah, blah, blah.
TÜV, right? Approved.
Yeah, so in Germany it's like good luck getting anything street legal with TÜV, right?
Man, if you would just show up with that, yeah, like you would go to prison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right after Goodwood, we're going straight to Germany.
Are you guys going to Goodwood? Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying. And then we plan to spend the summer in a German jail, repenting what we just did. But
biggest burnout on the border.
I think what you guys should do is you should take the half 11, park it in front of the Porsche Museum, and just like see how many Germans you can offend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the goal has always been to try and get it into a Porsche Museum, but you know, parking outside's a close second. But yeah, back to the environment. I mean, I think it's also, you know, it is a little bit specific. You have to be like a creative person to have the vision, right? So a lot of people that do fabrications or, you know, like builds and stuff, they don't necessarily have the creativity and vision something really far out, right? And so to make that extreme leap, I think you have to be, yeah, creative and dumb enough in some ways to like draw a napkin sketch and be like, let's build it, you know? So I think that mixed with California.
And I think there's two of us and we're kind of enablers.
Yeah.
So it's like one guy comes up with a bad idea and we're just like, we double down on it because it's an echo chamber. And we're like, no, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element of like, if there was one of us, I don't know if it happens.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Well, it helps to have like a second one who's as crazy as you are.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, oh, I don't think you're thinking big enough.
We could go wider.
But yeah, we're definitely also super blasé about everything we're exposed to here. Mm-hmm. You know, like you see an F40 drive down the street, you're like, who cares?
Yeah,
I see that all the time. So yeah, it's definitely a weird environment in some ways, and ripe for the opportunity to do something really, really wild, I think.
Yeah,
for sure.
Hey, before I let you guys go, one last question, a little bit more like, call it philosophical in that sense. I'll go. If we look ahead a little bit in like next 5 to 10 years, transportation design, mobility design, car design in California, what do you guys see as the biggest challenges for it to kind of advance, take that next kind of step? But also, what are the best kind of enablers where California could, you know, not just be in the top three of these car design world hubs, but really like be the runaway leader? What holds it back and what enables it to get there?
Gosh, what holds it back or what, why it wouldn't, to me, is just basically remote work. You know, because it's like if you could live in any other place that's also warm and sunny, that doesn't cost $1 million for a shoebox to live in. I think it's going to be really difficult, like, to have these sort of social hubs or community where people are interacting. I think it's really hard to justify the price and everything for even the car companies, if I'm being pessimistic. I don't think they'll go anywhere, but in terms of what would empower it, I mean, I think there's you know, obviously a huge automotive shift that's been happening over the last 10 years, like who's making the electric cars and who's not and who's competitive and who isn't. I think LA is still the center of tech, basically. California still is. But even then, the tech companies are now starting to move out of Austin, tax situations, et cetera. So California has a lot of challenges, that's for sure. But I still think it's just kind of cool. Like, I don't know if that's like good enough.
What a capo.
Yeah.
The vibe helps, doesn't it?
It's just cool, right? And it's, if you say you have a studio in California or in LA, it's like, that'll never not be cool.
Yeah.
Look, I personally think that the things that California has going for it is potentially experiential kind of design, right? And just rethinking what automotive is. And primarily interiors, actually, is my personal opinion on this. Because I think you have this infusion of tech, you have this ability, like inherently electric cars right now, they're quiet, but otherwise they're pretty much still combustion engine vehicles, right? Yeah. And I think with, you know, hopefully some advancements in autonomous tech and stuff like that, you can get interiors that are just so much more radically rethought, you know? Biased here, but like Canoo was starting to do something. Yeah. But you know, that's only, I think, the starting point. I think there's so much further it can go. At some point, I think just sticking, you know, a private jet seat in there is not what regular people need or want or anything. So I think if you look at how people in California use their cars from outdoors, urban environments, all of this, there's a lot in experiential design that can inspire and hopefully provide that boost to the studios here that no one else really has access to.
Yeah, I mean, the bandwidth's huge, right? You can go skiing and surfing in the same day, and then you can, you know, watch a movie on Sunset.
Yeah.
Like, you can cover an insane day in the life of, you know?
Yeah. And that's just about activities. I mean, culturally,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Cool. Guys, thank you so much. It's been, it's been an absolute pleasure to be here with you guys. The environment is so cool. If anybody who's listening to that is in the area, just go and visit the guys. Just see the crazy cars and everything that goes along with it. So really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. And
thank you for, you know, having us on. Total pleasure.
Anytime. And to all the listeners, well, this was one of my most fun episodes I think I've ever had. So it was really cool. And as always, please let us know any feedback, any follow the guys, AllStandLab on Instagram. And of course, you will hear back from us in the next couple of weeks with the new episode of Gestalten. So take care and all the best.